Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to the TT Podcast. In the end, it was a Giro of attrition. 176 riders began the race in Abruzzo, with 51 dropping out en route to Rome. The light for Primoz Roglic meant heartbreak for Geraint Thomas before everybody came together and united behind a Mark Cavendish victory. Joining me to discuss the sharp end of this year's Giro d'Italia is my co-host Tom. Tom, how are you?
Hello, everyone. Yeah, I'm much further away than usual now, but I'm good. And I did manage to catch up with the Cavendish victory yesterday, so I'm very happy with the end of that Giro.
That's good. Tell me, Tom, how are you set up? You're in Peru.
I am currently in Peru, yeah. I left. So I was in Bergamo last Sunday. I had one more day in Italy after that, where we did. So I say I was in Bergamo because I did go to the Giro stage that day, which was won by Brandon McNulty, I believe.
It was.
I then had one more day in Italy, and last Tuesday I flew to Peru. So that's where I've been since.
And that brings us up to date. And how are you? How are you finding it? Are you enjoying what you've experienced so far in Peru?
I'm still quite jet lagged, I'll be honest. I'm not sleeping great. So it's 10 o'clock in the morning as we record this for me. And it's, 4 in the evening, 4 in the afternoon for you?
4 in the afternoon here, yeah.
Yep. So yeah, a lot to get used to. I'm having to break out my Spanish, which I haven't used since you and I both were in Spain about 4 years ago. So yeah.
Hey, bit rusty then.
Yeah.
You mentioned the Mark Cavendish victory there. I was at Ride London yesterday when that happened, and you were the one that actually broke the news to me, Tom.
Well, there we go. Well, it was a Sunday. I can tell you now, Peru is a country where there is nothing open on a Sunday, as it turns out. So I didn't have much to do. The big supermarket was open, so I didn't starve. At least I got to go and get some food. But then I was sat in front of the final day of the Premier League and the cycling. So yeah.
Look, there's been a lot of narrative around the way Mark Cavendish won and a certain person leading him out. And when you sent me the message through, and then I saw other people on Twitter that were like, Mark Cavendish has won, Geraint Thomas has led him out. I went back and watched the replays, right? And
yeah.
I was expecting to see Geraint Thomas on the front, caning it, heel off with 300 meters to go, and Cavendish spring off his wheel. What I saw was Geraint Thomas do a kind of decent, well, it was kind of a monster turn. Would you say it's a monster turn? Probably not, just a decent turn.
Yeah.
With about 2.5k to go, he's on the front for about 700 meters, and by the time he peels off, Cavendish is like 20th wheel, and there's like still 1.5k to go.
Yeah, it was made out to be a lot more than it was. By the time I actually saw the highlights, I was like, oh, it's still nice, but you know, it's not quite what I'd built it up to be in my head after reading what everyone else had said.
This is it. Maybe we shouldn't let the truth get in the way of the romanticizing.
No, exactly. Nothing stops a good narrative, does it?
It was a race of survivors, really, this year's Giro d'Italia, wasn't it? I mean, it was probably one of the toughest Grand Tours in recent history. But do you think it's fair to say one of the least eventful? I hesitate to use the word boring, but that's the word that I'm angling towards here.
Again, that seems to be the narrative that's being pushed. And certainly for those first 2 weeks, it was. But I think just because of the nature of the way the Giro is always the sort of routes they have to put in, and which I guess is dictated by the geography of Italy and where they can go, it's always backloaded towards the third week, isn't it? And you're just waiting. Everyone's just sort of waiting to pounce over those last final few stages.
But what is stopping them, right? So what they usually do is they do the kind of flattish coastal stages, something across the middle of Italy, which is a bit hilly, but then they do doubleheader Alps Dolomites.
Yeah.
What's stopping them from visiting the Alps earlier in the race, then kind of dropping south a little bit and then going into the Dolomites? I guess maybe it's less economical, less environmentally friendly, rather than doing a kind of more natural loop of the country.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, in my mind, I like it. It just sort of looks better when it is a natural loop, sort of, as you say. I'd like it to be a sort of linear thing where they go from one place to the other. And I guess when you've got a country the shape of Italy, that is difficult. Whereas in France and Spain, you sort of can go round the outside of the country, as it were.
Mm-hmm. So what do you make of the narrative of being a boring race? From what you saw, would you say it was slightly dull?
I was going to say it's not an instant classic, is it? But I think it certainly had its moments, and those final few days, that time trial was absolutely electric. So it got there in the end, I think.
There's almost part of me, after watching that time trial, that thinks, would it be great if that became customary before at the end of every single Grand Tour, we had a mountaintop time trial?
Yeah.
And I'd be like, that would make for great viewing. But the concern then for me is that the riders, which they almost kind of certainly did in this race, was they just wait for that and use that as the one day to win the race or make their mark.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think there's a place for the mountain time trials in the race, but maybe don't leave it for the last day every single time, because it does lead to the sort of racing we've seen. Throw one in there early doors.
That could be fun. Cat amongst the pigeons.
Yeah, really shake up the GC early on.
Yeah. Put some big gaps in and then make them. You know what? I completely agree with you. Put some big gaps in, and then you have like riders. The GC is kind of stacked down. You've got riders that are 14 seconds down, 30 seconds down.
Yeah.
Then they have to really attack when it comes to the mountains, rather than what we saw, which was kind of a bit neutralized.
Yeah, that's certainly my immediate thought.
You've cracked it.
There we go. I'll organize next year's race.
The reason I was hesitating to use the words boring was because people have been saying a lot on Twitter, right? And I thought, let me put myself in the rider's shoes here. Imagine you're a rider. You've ridden 5,000 meters elevation through horizontal rain in the Alps. And you get on your phone on the team bus afterwards. You can barely see because your eyes are basically glued together with dirt. And you find out that Darren from Epsom has tweeted to say that was a bit boring, who sat and watched it in front of the TV. And I don't know. That's why I'm hesitant to use that word.
No one goes out of their way.
But I'll very much imply that that's what it was.
No one goes out of their way to make it boring, do they? But you've got to ride the race in front of you. And it was always going to lead towards a big shootout over the last 2 or 3 days. And it probably, as you said, it was a very attritional race from the beginning. So maybe if there weren't the sort of level of withdrawals that there were in the first week, when you see big favorites leaving the race, all of a sudden your mindset does change. You think, well, I've just got to stay in this for now, and then we can make our move later on.
I think that's really what's going through a lot of the teams.
Mm.
Tom, I have prepared a quiz for you. And
yeah, I'm quite worried about this, because I said to you on WhatsApp 40 minutes ago, saying a quiz on a race that I have barely watched, despite the fact that I attended a stage, is not going to go well.
Look, I think the quiz will let us go over a few of the big talking points.
Yeah, okay.
And I'm also, the reason I'm putting in early doors here is because I'm concerned that I'll tell you some of the answers when we start discussing the race in a bit more detail.
Okay, let's get on with it then.
I split it into two parts. A numbers section, so where the answers are numbers, or not, no, maybe they're not all. Okay, anyway, we'll figure out. I haven't been too regimented with this quiz. And then a miscellaneous section.
That could be anything then.
Could be anything. So question one of the 8 question quiz. Name the riders who wore pink.
Right, so let's work backwards. Well, does Roglic count? Did he ever actually wear pink?
He wore pink on the final stage.
Of course he did, yeah. Sorry, he didn't take. He took it on the penultimate day. So
I do think this, though. After stage 20, I was like, Giro's done.
Yeah.
completely forgot, because that's the narrative, isn't it? Okay, right. Primoz Roglic.
Geraint Thomas. He held it for a while. Before him, it was... some guy had it for 2 days, didn't he? Arnaud, someone?
No. I think this guy had it when you were actually at the race as well.
Begins with an A, doesn't it?
Bruno.
Oh, his second name begins with an A. Bruno Armiga, something like that.
Bruno Armirai.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
Okay, right. Well, I don't know if I can give you that one. There are actually two more.
Remco. And going back to the first week, I'm struggling here. No, I'm completely lost.
Norwegian lad.
You
know what? I don't fault you for this, because the amnesia that I have after a Grand Tour, I'd forgotten this guy. And my brother said to me, well, don't forget this guy. And I was like, he was in it for like 5 days.
I'll fully admit that I've just gone and looked it up. So I do know it now. And there is no way I was ever getting that.
Genuinely, you weren't going to get it.
No.
I've got a list up next to me of all the stage winners, because there are some... Nico Denz winning 2 stages, that's been completely erased from my memory.
So it's Andreas Leknesund.
It is.
Yeah. You can't give me that one because I did cheat.
No, I'm sure the listeners were screaming at that one. Question two, which rider holds the record for the most UCI second places in a calendar year?
Ooh. In the Giro or just over the...
He took the record in the Giro.
Again, you're really getting me on this one because what I have done is paid attention to the stage winners and the jerseys and whatever, but whoever's being beaten into second on the day, I've got no idea. Roglic.
No, I'll give you a 50-50.
That's a terrible answer. Roglic.
It's a very bad answer. I'll give you a 50-50. Is it Thibaut Pinot or Derek G?
That's interesting because did Derek G, did he win the overall competitivity award in the end?
He did.
He was very active throughout the race. But I don't know how many times he actually came second, whereas Pinot, when he comes second, it's a big deal normally because he should have won and just somehow shot himself in the foot every time. So I'm going to have to go with Thibaut.
It is Thibaut.
Yeah.
And the way you described it then was no more so than, I can't remember which stage it was, stage that, was it Butrago won? No, the stage that Ina Rubio won. No, was it? No, it was the stage that Zana won, where Pinot and Zana.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
And
so Pino, stage 18.
Yeah, for absolutely no reason, Pinot just decides to lead out Zana for a kilometer. And I was like, there's not a chance he's going to win this now.
It was textbook Thibaut Pinot, really, wasn't it?
We wouldn't have it any other way. Following on from that, question three is, how many second places did Derek G get at this race, at the Giro d'Italia?
The number I immediately have in my head is three.
In stages, this is what I mean, not in classifications.
Yeah. I don't know why I've gone three, but that I'm going to lock it in because I've got no better guess.
The answer is four. And by the way, the answer to the previous question was that Pinot has had five UCI second places this year.
Oh, that question was just for this year, not like an all-time thing as well?
Just for this year.
Oh, right. Okay.
Next question, the final question in the numbers section. How many teams finished with a full cohort?
There's no way I'm going to be able to methodically work this through, so I'm going to guess
at... We haven't got time for you to go through all your back.
Eight.
No, much, much smaller.
Four.
Two.
Two.
Bahrain Victorious and Jumbo Visma. And maybe that's kind of one of the reasons why Roglic was able to stay so fresh into that final time trial.
That is crazy.
Yeah. I mean, Ineos lost three or four riders, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, you see, it was Quickstep were down to two, like really early on as well, or something as well, weren't they? So
they were. And it makes you think, though, right, that when they're running a full Giro team with, you know, the big team bus, all the mechanics, maybe they sent some of the mechanics home, but you got the mechanics, the masseurs, the cooks, everything. Mm-hmm. For two riders who were not really involved in the race. I think it was Peter Seri and Louis Vivarca.
I will take your word for it.
Let me see. Peter Seri and Ilan Van Wilder. How much of them did you see in the final week of the race?
I can't say I've ever seen either of them once, to be honest.
You can't say you saw much of the final week of the race.
Yeah.
miscellaneous round, you ready for it?
Let's go.
What taxidermy animal did someone wield at... I can see your face sinking here. What taxidermy animal did someone wield at the side of the road on stage 19? Multiple choice. Is it...
Oh, right. Good.
Unless you know it.
I don't. I'm just trying to see where stage 19 even was. No, go on.
Is it A, a fox, B, a badger, or C, a rabbit?
My immediate guess would be rabbit. I'm not sure there actually are that many foxes and badgers in Italy. Badgers, I've got no idea. But I can tell you now, whenever Gaia has come to the UK and we've seen a fox, she's been absolutely astounded because she never sees them in Italy. So I'm not sure there are that many foxes.
Well,
so if the answer's fox, I'm going to be really annoyed.
This is one of the things that I find living in London. I see a lot of foxes, right?
Yeah.
And that's not a brag, by the way. But I just find foxes to be, and I've told so many people this is a line that I bring out a lot. Foxes are such a magical creature that whenever you see them, whenever I see them, I can't speak for everybody, I will stop in my tracks and I will stare and watch the fox until it is no longer in eyesight. I think a lot of people do that.
Yeah, I like a fox as long as I'm a safe distance rider. You never really know with them, do you? But
I think you do know. I don't think the fox is going to get you.
Oh, they can.
Okay. Right. Do you want to answer this question? Fox, badger, rabbit?
Right. I want to rule out badger. Look, I'm going rabbit because a big taxidermy fox carrying that by the side of the road as well. No, rabbits are much smaller.
The answer was fox.
Yeah.
Fox. It was on like a plinth, so it was quite easy for them to carry. And for some reason, they ran alongside with this fox. If anybody knows the reason why that was, then you can tweet us at TTPDCST. That's
getting
right.
Socials in early. Yeah.
First time I've ever done that.
First time you've had to do that. Yeah.
First time I've ever done that. Quite easy, actually. You make it seem very difficult sometimes. Then please let us know. The second question in the miscellaneous round. Unless you wanted to say something about the taxidermy fox.
No, it's just coming to my head that fox in Italian is volpe. Otherwise, I've got nothing more to say.
Perfect. Well, that we'll move on from that one. Which Hollywood actor revealed himself as a Geraint Thomas super fan during this year's Giro d'Italia?
I'm pretty sure that's Ben Stiller.
It was Ben Stiller.
Yeah.
He tweeted yesterday after the final stage about, you know, where there was a picture of Cav and Geraint Thomas hugging, and he was like, two greats of the sport. And I don't know. It seemed very funny that he was... I'd never known him as being somebody that was really into cycling.
It's a very odd crossover, isn't it? Look, I don't remember the cycling scene in Zoolander or whatever, so I'm not...
Or Night at the Museum, there wasn't...
Yeah.
No. Question three. We're back to the race now, really.
Okay.
True or false? The fan who helped push Primoz Roglic after his time trial mechanical was one of his old ski jumping teammates.
I think false, but was not one of his old ski jumping teammates in the team car or something instead? Was that what I thought? I read that. Maybe I've got the two stories mixed up, but one of his old ski jumping teammates was definitely there somewhere, but I thought was maybe working for the team rather than a fan on the side of the road.
Tom, I'm not going to be very technical about this. I'm not trying to like dupe you here.
Okay, true.
It is true. Yeah. couldn't tell you anything about ski jumping or anything about this person, but I'm reliably informed by Twitter that was that, and I've not done any more of my own research, so that could be completely false. And finally, and this one, Tom, I think you'd be able to get very easily. Which cyclist announced his retirement on the second rest day?
Okay, and that's Mark Cavendish.
That's Mark Cavendish.
We can move away from that one quickly.
Do you want to mull over that for a second? How did you react to that? Did it come as a surprise to you?
No, not at all. A, because it had been leaked by everyone the day before. And B, because, I mean, it's the second time we're going through a Cav retirement now as well, isn't it? So, look.
So you don't, but do you not believe it? Do you think that maybe he'll win the Tour de France stage and then...
You know what? After he won on yesterday, you thought maybe he might reconsider that retirement again.
You think? I genuinely believe he might. I think the same for Thibaut Pinot, because Pinot performed so well across these weeks. He won the KOM... He won the mountains classification.
Yeah.
That I'm like, he's clearly showing that he can still compete at the top level. Why would he retire now?
Cav yesterday as well. When he kicked, he moved away from the rest of them so easily, didn't he? That was like watching him 10 years ago.
I actually think the most impressive thing about Cav's sprint yesterday wasn't necessarily the fact that he put four bike lengths into them. It was how well he read that finale. And I guess he won't lose that. And also it was that, but also the fact that he had that kick after 3 weeks off, as we've said, the most attritional Grand Tour that we've seen in recent years. And he managed to get through all of that and still have that kick at the end.
The thing that stuck out for me was Geraint Thomas's interview saying, well, I saw he only had Lewis Leon there with him. I was like, what is wrong with Astana? How?
It was a bit of
in the final sprint have you got Cav there with only, I assume, a 50-year-old Lewis Leon Sanchez for company?
It was a bit of a kick in the teeth for Lewis Leon Sanchez, that comment, wasn't it? I felt kind of sorry for him. The fact that Lewis Leon Sanchez is so redundant in a lead out that Geraint Thomas, who has given everything the day before on a time trial, can put Cav in a better position.
And my other takeaway was how nice it was to have that final stage in Rome. It was a stunning backdrop for that sprint.
Beautiful. I saw some of the highlights and there was a sweeping shot of them coming in front of the Colosseum.
Yeah.
And I was like, stunning.
Yeah, it's nice. And look, when the Tour obviously has its day in Paris, but the Giro we've seen in Verona and Milan, both of which have also, I think you can go to any Italian city and find a really nice background to just pan the camera around while people cycle past. But Rome is something else because, you know, Rome's Rome.
Yeah, beautiful. I don't know if you're picking this up, Tom, on your headphones, but my neighbor has decided this is a very good time to whip out the hedge trimmer.
I cannot hear anything. So
you can't hear it. That's good. No. But if the listener has, by chance, much better headphones than you and can hear that, then that is what that is. yeah, it sounds like, I don't know, like an F1 engine, like being at the Monaco Grand Prix, or what I would imagine it would be like to be at the Monaco Grand Prix.
Yeah, I know you've struggled for your metaphor there, but I think we all know what a hedge trimmer sounds like. So
yeah, that's okay. Are there any stages you want to break down here in particular? Or should we talk about the GC first? No surprises really on the GC, was there?
I did think Geraint Thomas was going to win.
I thought he was going to win, and I was gutted when he didn't, and even more so when he was such a good bloke about it.
I mean, and he said, didn't he, look, it's not come down to like 1 second. At least he smashed me. That makes it easier.
He did smash him. And yeah. It could have been a lot worse. If Primoz Roglic hadn't had that mechanical, I think cost him the best part of 20 seconds.
Yeah.
So it could have been, and not to make the illusion too much, genuinely like Planche des Belfis territory there, where he has, you know, 26 seconds to make up. And ends up making up twice as much as he needs.
Yeah, absolutely. The rest of the GC, I don't know, because as we said, there were so many withdrawals that by the end, it just sort of felt like it was a GC of who was left.
Yeah, well, don't put me down, because I did correctly predict that Joao Almeida would come third.
I wasn't putting you down. I'll give you all credit for that.
Well, there was an inkling that, you know, he'd got third by default, and There was a massive gulf between the top three and poor Damiano Caruso in fourth.
There's 3.5 minutes between Almeida and Caruso, yeah.
That's huge.
But I don't know. Again, I always think it depends on the way the race is ridden and what's up for grabs. Like, did Caruso ever really entertain? I suppose he must have done because he's been there before, but was he going after a podium, or do you think he was there to just hunt for some stages? Like, would you make?
I think he was going for a podium.
Yeah.
Shall we talk about, let's hone in on some stages. I'm personally not particularly interested, and no offense to these people, in the victories of Nico Denz, Aina Rubio, Alberto Danesi, Filippo Zanna, Santiago Buitrago.
That's fine. We can get rid of them straight away.
Shall we talk about your day out in Bergamo?
I'm happy to do that. That's the day I know best.
How
Bergamo,
was it?
By the way, lovely. Really, really nice place. I was obviously staying in Milan, so I got the train over, and Gaia was forced into coming with. We probably arrived there as the stage was starting in Serenio or somewhere like that it was called, can't remember. And what was nice, actually, they did a double lap round Bergamo, so we got to see them come through twice. Unfortunately, I would say we positioned ourselves at the finish, which is in Bergamo, as a city is split into sort of the high and the low towns. We were down in the low town, and anyone who was watching on the TV would have seen they get to that sort of summit 3K to go and then come all the way back down to the finish. If I'd thought about it, we probably could have got ourselves on the climb somewhere and seen a lot more of the action, which would have been a better way to do it. Instead, we saw them come through on a downhill finish at like 65K, and that was that.
You didn't really miss much up there, I don't think, apart from the atmosphere. I mean, we were expecting a bit of a GC shake-up up there, which never came. It was a bit of a damp squib, which is kind of the story of this Giro, which is where you're expecting a GC shake-up, and all that happens is Joao Almeida ships 3 seconds or ships five more seconds.
Yeah.
But no, I'm glad you had a nice day out. You sent me a picture of a very sullen-looking girlfriend of yours. When I said, how's your day going? You sent me a picture of her and you just said, she wants to go home. So even with two laps in front of you, even with them passing twice in front of you, it wasn't enough to to keep her interested?
I don't think she really knew what was going on. When we got back that night, she said, oh, so we saw the Maya Rosa, that's the person who won the stage the day before. And I said, no, it's not. No, it's not. That's not how it works. And so I found myself explaining to Gaia and her flatmate how all the jerseys are calculated and who the actual winner of the race is.
So I do that. I have a lot of friends that take interest in these things when I'm talking about them. And I think they do it out of politeness, but then they get this onslaught of just pointless knowledge to them of, oh yeah, this is how this works. And yeah, the final day, it's not really raced, but it's kind of like a procession. But yeah, it kind of is finished. It finished on stage 20, and the pink jersey is whoever's got the best time overall. And you can almost see the moment they clock out, and I will keep going because I have no filter.
And well, I think with Gaia, we forced her to the race before, but that was for a final day time trial in Milan when Theo Gegenhardt won. And I think to the beginner, a time trial makes a lot more sense than a stage on the road.
Well,
so this
look,
was new ground for her, yeah.
Next year, she'll enjoy it even more, I think.
Yeah, well, she'll be taken to any stage possible again.
Any other stages stood out to you, Tom, that you want to talk about? Or do you want to skip straight to the finales?
Again, look, that first 2 weeks, I'm happy to skip over all of it.
Okay.
I don't know if you've got anything earmarked there, but yeah, more or less straight to the final days in the mountains and the time trial.
Let's do it. Let's talk time trial. Yeah. My favorite thing about the time trial, well, actually, let's talk about the stage before the time trial, because we saw Geraint Thomas attacking Primoz Roglic, Roglic coming back, Roglic on this fascinating bike, which has a gravel group set, 44 tooth at the back, which is a giant dinner plate sized cassette, well, cog at the back of the cassette, foreshadowing what was going to happen the next day.
Roglic just did his usual thing at the end there, didn't he, as well, and just jumped with 300 to go at the top of the mountain. But
wait, spin a ridiculous cadence, and then when he gets to the finish line, go.
Yeah. Mop up any bonus seconds that might be there.
Well, there weren't. And this is crucially, I thought that we were going to have, he was going to pop around Magnus Kort and he was going to take bonus seconds. It would go into the final day and he'd only have, you know, short of 20 seconds or maybe 20 seconds to make up. Magnus Kort held him off. And I thought in that moment, Magnus Kort doesn't really know this, but he might have well helped Geraint Thomas win the Giro d'Italia. Sadly, he didn't.
Yeah, luckily. Well, I say luckily, sadly, whichever way you want to look at it, it didn't come down to such a fine margin in the end, did it? But yeah.
Let's talk time trial then. The ultimate redemption arc for Primoz Roglic. I would argue it's hardly fair that they basically held it in his native Slovenia. I think it would have been much, much more fair if they'd held it in South Wales, or much better if they'd held it in South Wales. I mean, there was half the population of Slovenia on the climb. The stage was set. He's got his mates at the roadside.
Yeah. I think we did allude to this in the preview, though. Said, look, it's on the Slovenian border. There's only going to be one man up for it, isn't there? At the time, we were framing this as a sort of Remco versus Roglic thing, and it obviously didn't pan out that way. But I think it was known from a long time before how much of an influence the location of that stage could have.
That was huge. I mean, you saw the flags and the banners everywhere. It was all Slovenian. And I was like, not fair, not fair. And that's why, you know, if you're going to rig a grand tour like that, then how's Geraint Thomas going to stand a chance?
All right. Why don't French riders win the tour every year then?
That's true. No, you're right. An interesting interesting tidbit that I noticed on that stage was the top five in the stage results was the same as the final top five in the GC.
Is that uncommon? I've never really paid any attention to it before, but obviously they go off in reverse GC order already to begin with.
No, because usually you have a couple of really good time trialers in there. You'll have, maybe, you know, you've Ganner in third or... Not on a mountain one,
it's a mountain time trial, otherwise you do get your your Ganners, your Tony Martins, your Cancellaras would always turn up and do a little Wout van Aert.
You'd expect, you know, we've spoken a bit about the mechanical. I don't know if there's much more to say on that. It made my heart sink when it happened, kind of out of, like, I'll be honest, I was rooting for G. I think we were both rooting for G. We've made that very clear here. I was quite delighted when, that's not a fair way to say it.
Of Schadenfreude.
I was relieved maybe because I saw how well Roglic was going and I thought, Geraint's in trouble here. And I thought, right, this is, you know, this is an opportunity. This is a lifeline. And then, if anything, I think it just sent Roglic into like turbo mode, and he went flat out for the top section of that climb.
Absolutely sent it, yeah. Look, not to take away anything from Geraint Thomas, because he is both of these things as well, but Roglic is an unbelievable climber and an unbelievable time trialist. So we know he's got the skill set. He is, what, 4 years younger than Geraint Thomas? I don't know how much of a difference that makes. Maybe it was just the home crowd pulling for him. That certainly does make a difference, like mentally, when you've just got constant support on the way up. It must be great.
One of the things I liked about that time trial, Tom, was how human the average speeds were. So they were coming over the line and it was clocking. For like the earlier riders, it was like average speed, 23 kilometers an hour. And bearing in mind that they'd hit like 45, 46 on the run into it.
Yeah.
Like they were doing that final climb at 12, 13 kilometers an hour. Now I did Alpe d'Huez, Tom, at 11 kilometers an hour. Which is quite slow.
Obviously, Alpe d'Huez
doesn't have 22% gradients, and I'm not trying to compare myself.
I'm left a bit speechless here because it sounds like you're, if any DSs are listening, you're asking for a job.
You know what? I think I could do a role. Then we go to stage 21. Mark Cavendish wins. We've spoken about that. One of the main talking points I want to bring from stage 21 to you, Tom, is not about the race itself. And this could be a nice final note here, is I want your opinion on the beer choice of Ineos Grenadiers after the stage.
I've not seen this. What was it?
They posted a picture. Well, posted the pictures like all over their socials of them with bottles of beer. And they are drinking San Miguel.
No, that's not really acceptable, is it?
In Rome, after 3 weeks touring around Italy, they buy bottles of San Miguel. It's not a team sponsor issue. They're not sponsored by San Miguel or not sponsored by Spanish beers. They have no tie to Spain. Of all the good beers in Italy, which I discovered when I was out there on holiday last week or the week before, I was very disappointed.
Look, lager's lager, as long as it's cold. I don't really mind. But when you're in Italy, you've got to drink the local stuff.
Surely the local stuff's the cheapest stuff as well.
Exactly, the Peroni that the Italians don't touch at like €1 a bottle in the supermarkets. Yeah.
Something that threw me when I was on there is they call the other Peroni Nastro Azzurro.
Oh, so I know what this Nastro Azzurro means, blue ribboned, which was the prize given to the fastest ships crossing the Atlantic still is given, but we don't really do transatlantic liners anymore. So, and it was a really prestigious prize in the early 1900s. And it's just come to mean anything that's, you know, at the top of its field.
And this is
so
it.
There you go. Yeah.
Ineos could have chosen such a historic beer steeped in maritime history. And instead they've gone for a San Miguel.
Yeah. You can get Nastro Azzurro for about £8 a pint in any pub in London, though. So don't worry.
that ties us up. That brings us to the end of the Giro d'Italia, Tom.
Yeah, perfect. I don't know when we're going to do this again. My timetable in Peru is very uncertain at the moment, but it can be done. That's good news. We've recorded a full episode here.
We've managed. And we might the next one we do might be well be the tour preview. Do you know what scares me, Tom, is that the Dauphiné starts next week. Like the racing just...
Oh, it's thick and fast.
It doesn't stop.
It's horrible. It's not horrible. It's great. But there's a lot to keep up with.
Yeah, I don't think we'll be doing much on the Dauphiné unless something really interesting happens. Our next big episode might well be a Tour de France preview.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. Before that, though, in the meantime...
Do you want me to do the socials, even though you've already done them?
Yeah, you can do the socials, Tom. Take us away.
You can follow us on Twitter and Insta at TTPDCST.
Very good. You know what? I might just cut that and use that in every single episode.
Don't know why I put that voice on, but yeah.
Tom, a pleasure speaking with you. I hope you are well settled in Peru and that your teaching and everything you're doing goes well when you start doing that. That didn't sound very authentic, but I did mean it authentically.
That's fine. I'm off to go and join the gym and sort out a phone contract now. That's my plan for the day.
Like a true local.
Yeah.
Very good. The listener, thank you as always for tuning in. And we will be back sooner than you might hope, perhaps.
Thanks, everyone.
Take care.